Hello everyone. Intelligent Transportation System is back with a whole new package of information. Let's start with our short news mini section. This is Dr. Maryam Kavishkar giving you the news for episode 40, May 2017. Recently, the focus of many companies has shifted to trucks and their autonomous driving. Apart from Otto, Mercedes and Volvo, now Packard has announced its intentions to bring autonomous trucks onto roads. And the well-known NVIDIA will be in partnership. The founder and CEO of NVIDIA, Jensung Huang, shared this news during his keynote at Bosch Connected World Conference in Berlin. Currently, Packard manufactures the Kenworth, Peterbilt and DAF lines of trucks. And now it has developed a proof of concept self-driving truck with SAE Level 4 capability built on NVIDIA Drive PX2 technology, trained on deep neural networks. They showcased a video of a Packard semi-tractor trailer driving on a closed route without a driver behind the wheel. Elon Musk from Tesla has announced that his company will transform the role of a truck driver. Tesla is planning to produce all-electric semi-trucks with a lot of autonomous features. However, in an interview, he mentioned that it'll be a few years after trucks can self-drive before regulators have seen enough data to feel comfortable not having a driver in the car. Baidu, China's largest search engine group, is determined to follow the steps of Google. They have announced that they are ready to open source their self-driving technology secrets. This happened at the Shanghai Auto Show. They declared their Apollo project as an open, complete, and reliable software platform for its partners in the automotive and autonomous driving industry to develop their own autonomous driving systems. The process will take place in a few stages, starting from this July and hopefully by 2020, fully autonomous driving capabilities on highways and open city roads will be available. After BMW and Volkswagen, Nissan also adds up to REM platform members to use the global roadbook maps. REM, or Road Experience Management, is a mobilized platform providing high-precision road maps, which are updated in real time using anonymized, crowdsourced data from cars on the road. Nissan has agreed to contribute to the pool of collective crowdsourced data. Google autonomous cars are ready to take their real passengers. Waymo has announced that the residents of Phoenix are welcomed to sign up for using the minivans. It is a fleet of 500 Chrysler Pacifica minivans. So far, only employees and contractors were using these cars. As their CEO, John Krafcik, said, they want to find how real people outside their Google environment will use this technology. So, go ahead, podcast listeners from Phoenix, try the car and let us know how was it. This month, our dear colleague Professor Haluk Eren has surprised us with a bit different book title. He has reviewed a book mainly focusing on UAVs, which must be very interesting and awaited for some of our listeners in this field. Let's see what he has to say.
This is the book review section for the present episode of RTS podcast, reviewed by Dr. Haluk Eren, Fırat University, Elazığ, Turkey. The book title is Smart Autonomous Aircraft, Flight Control and Planning for UAV, and consists of 434 pages, written by Yasmina Besto-Sevan. It was produced by CRC Press in 2016. The book is dedicated to graduate students and researchers engaged with UAV. It includes computational intelligence modeling, advanced flight control methods and planning in dynamic and uncertain environments, situation awareness, decision making, and illustrative case studies. Chapter 1 mentions about the mainstream of the book, which includes existing unmanned aerial vehicles, autonomous systems, and smart aircraft. In chapter 2 and 3, reference frames and coordinate systems, kinematic and dynamic models for airplanes are presented. Takagi Sugiyama modeling, fuzzy modeling, mission tools, the model of the atmosphere, and linear hybrid automation are discussed. It addresses airplane control problems and solutions to achieve motion autonomy as well as common control system strategy under different flight conditions in an atmospheric flight and disturbances. Case studies are presented to illustrate the methods. Chapter 4 introduces path and trajectory planning with trim trajectories, followed by maneuvers without wind. Zermalo's problem is then considered to provide aircraft's trajectories in the wind. Guidance and collision or obstacle avoidance are included to generate alternate paths in 3D environment with static and dynamic obstacles such as turbulence and storms. Then, route optimization and fuzzy planning are discussed for mission planning. Case studies promote the theory. Chapter 5 introduces situation awareness related to low-level flight control and high-level control elements such as flight and mission planning. Via individual data sources due to the uncertainty in data acquisition and processing. Integrated onboard navigation solutions with position, velocity, and attitude via accelerometer and gyro sensors, using diverse Kalman filter, Monte Carlo, SLAM, and geolocation approaches are all discussed. Onboard control system investigates health state of UAV to decide appropriate action reducing mission failures. Model reference adaptive control and maneuver envelope determination are important issues for fault-tolerant flight control. Fault-tolerant planner detailing trim state, reliability and safety analysis, obstacle avoidance, mission decision, environmental uncertainty such as modeling errors, external disturbances, and incomplete situational awareness are all included in the chapter. Chapter 6 comprises conclusions and it speculates future environment of smart autonomous aircraft. Considering rapid developments of UAV in research, military, and commercial fields, the book discusses the state-of-the-art topics to assess autonomy of UAVs. Readers interested in UAV with autonomous systems and smart aircraft will find useful information in the book.
Thank you, Haluk. That was very interesting. Now let's listen to a keynote by Professor Mohan Trivedi from University of California, San Diego. Professor Wolf is introducing Professor Trivedi.
Professional trajectory. Mohan Trivedi, as you perfectly know, is a distinguished professor of electrical and computer engineering and founding director of the Computer Vision and Robotics Research Laboratory. And LISA. LISA stands for Laboratory for Intelligent and Safe Automobiles at the University of California at San Diego. Trivedi has mentored over 30 PhD, 15 postdoc, 75 master scholars, and has presented over 80 keynotes all over the world. Impressive figures. Currently, Mohan Trivedi and his team are pursuing research in intelligent vehicles, machine perception, machine learning, human-robot interactivity, driver assistance, active safety, and intelligent transportation systems. He received the IEEE IDEA Society's highest award, the highest distinction that the IDEA Society gives, which is the Outstanding Research Award in 2013, and the Lead Institution Award for LISA in 2015. Professor Trivedi serves regularly as a consultant to industry and government agencies in the USA and abroad. And in addition, he is a fellow of the IEEE, SPIE, and IAPI. Well, this being said, on the grounds of my personal friendship and relationship with Professor Trivedi, I can add that apart from being an excellent researcher and a marvelous person, he is a brilliant communicator, as you're going to see in a second. So, Professor Trivedi, we are eager to listen to your talk, so the floor is entirely yours.
Thank you so much. Good morning to all of you. It's indeed my honor to be here with you this morning this is my first visit to South America, and I could not have asked for a better hospitality, better reception, and a fantastic program to look forward to today. I must thank the program committee, Professor Wolf, and the general chair, Professor Rosaldo Rossetti, for inviting me. And I hope that in the next 45 minutes or so, I would be able to share with you many of the thoughts that I think we all already have, but I hope that we will be able to instigate or stimulate some kind of a group thinking, because I really think that many of the things that I'm going to talk about, I don't have solutions for that, but I do worry about many of those things. And I think they are exciting challenges, especially for the younger scholars to give their best. So I have called this particular, I spent some time thinking about the title for this, and we all need to justify what we are doing and why people should be involved in it, and also importantly, why they should pay for it, because we are research laboratory. So really, I would like to emphasize some of the things which are in this particular slides and have some discussion with you. So I really want to talk about humans. And I have realized that these days, when you open up newspapers, media channels, marketing brochures and all that, they talk about the second world, which is the self-driving and autonomous more, but humans little less. And I wanted to bring that back there. And I also want to say that this is a quest. This is a quest that many of us have started in one particular direction, but I think a cohabitation of intelligent humans and intelligent robots is what I seek. I am not seeking for a revolution where robots are going to win and they are going to annihilate the creators of them. But I really want to have a place for me, my children, and yours too, to safely, enjoyably, pleasantly, and comfortably live with these intelligent creatures which are coming at us. We could not have done what we did without the help and involvement of just a fantastic group of young scholars over the years. I have picked up some of the pictures that I could find earlier this morning, but this list is really, I cannot give credit to each and every one of them who have worked on it. I also would like to say that many of the thoughts which are important to my own way of thinking have come not only of people who are in engineering, but people who were in other disciplines like cognitive science, like psychology, or even in neurosciences. And I do thank them all. Again, as I mentioned, we have been extremely fortunate that over the years we pursue experimental research, which tends to be very expensive, which tends to be very difficult to justify beforehand why you want to build something that you really seek. But we have been really very fortunate that a whole bunch of great sponsors have put confidence in us, and we have been able to generate something with that help. So, a basic outline for this is what I have written down here, that I don't really think this is a one-way communication. I'm glad that we are meeting on the first day, right at the beginning. So in the next 3-4 days, we'll have opportunities to have a conversation if we cannot do it all in this 1 hour. But I really would like to bring out certain words which have given me comfort as well as trouble. What is intelligence? And autonomous robots have been around also. Are they equal? If we go for intelligent automobiles, what is the role of humans in it? I would also like to propose that maybe from people who are not interested necessarily in automotive fields, but who are really interested in artificial intelligence, where there would be engineered intelligent entities which are going to be around us, biological intelligent entities, how are we going to figure out what is the mathematical framework in which we can develop new ideas, new algorithms, new ways in which we can come up with ideas which would allow us to distribute agencies which are intelligent and do something safely, reliably, efficiently, enjoyably. And then I will share with you some of the little snippets, a few things that we have learned, a few things that we really have trouble with, but hopefully with your involvement over the next decades, we should be able to touch on some of these things. I think Professor Sutala did not say that I am a very difficult person to stop talking when I start talking. So this is my last slide. I wanted to show it to you first. So in case we run out of time, these are the points that I really wanted to make or want to make. First of all, what is the big idea that is pushing this? We really would like to emphasize safe as the number one thing, stress-free, efficient and enjoyable driving experience for long-term goals that we have is really not replacement of humans with intelligent robotic systems, but cohabitation of humans and robots. We also would like to present to you that some of the ways in which we have succeeded in doing few little things has taken this approach of systems which are holistic, systems which take for granted that agencies are going to distribute and cooperate in getting the right answers. We also believe that learning is very important. So even though we do not know all the rules and all the algorithms, how to make this thing work, for last 16 years, religiously, we have been driving in Southern California, especially in San Diego, collecting huge bunch of data before we realized what to do with it. But we have been collecting data from inside, from outside, from everywhere we can find, and then we let go some of our experts in machine learning to find, are there some patterns which might be useful for doing some predictive, attentive analysis of certain things. And I would like to leave a note for a lot of us, and it's happening now in our field, that we believe that in order for us to succeed, it's important to have shareable, high quality data sets from naturalistic driving studies that we can use to use benchmarking as well as for doing evaluations and convincing people that this is going to work. So the quest for full autonomy is not something that I started out with. There are some people who actually did start out with some of those things some time ago. But there were people, probably as soon as we started talking about science fiction and vehicles and all that, that they talked about, would it not be nice to have fully autonomous systems that we can drive? Turns out that I stole an old video, image from Professor Dickman's papers, where he, in the 1980s, was building these vehicles which were running on autobahns autonomously. So what is new, what is old? There were also, some of my colleagues from CMU might be here, that they were building these cars and they drove from Pittsburgh to Los Angeles and San Diego over 2,000 miles with 95% autonomous mode, published in our own journal 21 years ago. Last year I was in Washington DC where Delphi people were showing a video that they drove from San Francisco to Washington DC approximately the same distance with 97 to 98% autonomy. Rains we would not go, nights we would not go, we will only drive on the freeways, was what they told me. I said, how are you different from Professor Dickman's? How are you different from the NavLab? 20 years had passed. Well, it turns out that even San Diego had a role to play. In 1997, there was a big demo that we called, where our dear friend and mentor, Professor Praveen Varaiya, did a 10-year study funded by our state government, FHWA. And what was going on there?
You eliminate the driver. So what is that? Because most of the mistakes and the jams and so forth are caused by driver behavior. We know a lot of social science which tries to modify driver behavior, and so this is a radical proposal, which is you modify the driver behavior by eliminating the driver. So the notion is you go to hands off, feet off, brains off driver.
What is the need for humans? They are the weakling. They are the problem. If you want to have autonomous systems,
so the road race,
take the human
out.
Would
next to you rather than the driver next to you.
And he wrote a beautiful paper that we require our students to read in the first term that they are in our lab.
It's by computers.
Which was autonomous vehicles and autonomous highways. Unfortunately, after it was done, 10-year study, not a single automotive company came back and took advantage of this $100 million that my government and my tax money had spent on that. Why people did not take it? Well, 10 years go by basically, and then some of us know that people started Grand Challenge, as it was called, and started developing vehicles which were shown to go 120 miles, same distance from Mosul to Baghdad. The Sunni Triangle area, we were getting a lot of casualties, so a wonderful Lieutenant Colonel from Pentagon thinks about idea that maybe there are things which are similar to Mosul in Southern California, and ask the academics for $1 million, can you run this thing or not? And people did try. First year nobody got $1 million, second year couple three finished, one team at Stanford got the award, his major professors came second, but people were showing some promise, and then a few years later some other things happened, but that was in my mind one of the most exciting landmarks in our field. But we should remember 120 miles in the desert, and mostly, as many of you know, the first one was doing nothing but a differential GPS based wayfinding algorithm. And so we start thinking that is this the end of research in autonomous robots, in vehicles? But then we start scratching our head and say, no, maybe there are some problems left. And basically, if you read that, the whole idea was that do we really believe that a driver, I should have put it in quotes, but I did do that a few years ago, but the human being will let the vehicle be robot or not? It also turns out that if you build it, and now we say that they are building someone, then eventually your boss or CEO is going to ask whether they will take it or not. And so generally, it is not good if DARPA takes it. It is not good if Caltrans takes it. Will it be bought by Professor Yanis as his primary mode of vehicle or not? And he's a rich man, he might think about, oh, no problem, 100 Ks I can do. Young people from college, they might say, no, 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 we want to do it for 20 Ks. He may say that I care for speeds, which are of a certain nature, but the guy who's going to sell you things is going to say that 20 miles I can guarantee. But the one thing that they don't talk about, and they really did not talk about it until about 14 months ago, 16 months ago, was the issue about safety. Our lab was named for safety, but really this was not in discussions. And people who build systems, engineers, they always worry about mean time between failures. And I don't know what that is, but I know for sure it is not infinite. It's going to fail. A system is going to fail, components are going to fail, and we really don't know what are the specifications for them to work reliably, and what is that you are willing to take as a risk. And so people like Professor Varia was saying that the only way you can guarantee this thing it would not fail is take the damn control out of hands of humans. But is that really the solution? And if that is the solution, what happens if robot refuses for you to take control? Like some of my friends in Google were actually saying that let's push the idea that you don't have to have a steering wheel, you don't have to have an accelerator, you don't have to brake. Just push waypoint to grandma's place or waypoint to my hand surgeon's place and it goes. Well, the person who pushed that, he's no longer at Google. But then there were certain things which I said happened about 15 months ago. That state of California, my home state, decided that we will let you experiment, but only one condition, that you get into an accident, you must report. Before that, people were getting into accidents, but they were not required to report because they were on campus. But then when you would say, I'm going to do it on city street, state required them to do that. And it did happen that first accident happens. And I'm going to take out, but this was on the blog of Chris Urmson, vetted by the entire Google legal team, maybe larger than the people who are gathered in this room here. It came out within a few hours of that saying, oh, by the way, the human in the front did not really follow the typical behavior in which when the light changes its color, he did not move. And I bumped into that. The robot says I bumped into that because the human really did not go across the street. Things start happening. Within a few months after that, and Chris's signature, I like this particular one, you can download it from internet. This was the accident which happened 6 months later where Google car was proven to have caused an accident. Now that is bad. It is even worse because it collided with a bus. So there were 50 people sitting in the bus and this thing went 2 miles per hour. So that also Chris says, the lawyers say, that we were so easily moving and nobody was hurt and all that, but it was a crash. And then life goes on. Other one, few months later, this year, you can recognize the vehicle. But still, I think it wasn't really all out in front. But there's another California company which we are very proud of. Innovative and creative and out-of-box kind of audacity. You can recognize. In advertisements, they would show this thing without your hands on it until a person from San Diego, poor Joshua Brown, from Coronado, a Navy SEAL, 40-year-old, risk taker, giving lot of inputs to Teslas. His hobby was to do this vehicles that you go bumping around and jumping on the big mounts. But just a few months ago, in May, his Tesla, he used to call it Tessie, and he met with a very bad situation. As you can see, this was also very famously reported all over the world. But the vehicle collided with not some little thing, an 18-wheeler, and Joshua Brown lost his life. A Navy SEAL, his reflexes are so good. Doesn't stop there. Another one, same vehicle, but it is difficult video to watch. Not something crossing you, but something which happens on the streets all the time in California. An emergency vehicle is stopped, a vehicle which is moving there, a 23-year-old boy borrowing his father's Tesla is driving there, and unfortunately the boy passed away. So now we have to worry that the safety which was not talked about until 14 months ago, now they are required to talk about. What are the things that we should learn from? So it turns out that we had an autonomous vehicle crash in our country 20-25 years ago. And it was such a large event that our president put together a group of 8 people, including one of my former colleagues, astronaut Sally Ride on that. And then they did this review over a 6-month period. They came up with something very interesting. They said that we talked to people at the people who made that particular vehicle, and people who were working on the manufacturing line, they said that, I really think this vehicle is going to blow up. 1 in 100 is going to blow up. Whereas the managers, the directors, deputy directors of the whole same company, they say, oh, it's going to blow up, but it is going to be 1 in 100,000. And I could not have attempted to say, like Professor Richard Feynman, who was also on that panel, talked about it. And he said that I baffled. How come the big managers in that company have an estimate which is orders of magnitude looser than people who make that? I am baffled by Elon Musk telling us that everything is fine. Why are you worried? And I know people in those companies sometimes move out of those companies because it is difficult to share with them these kinds of things. But the robots are coming. Autonomous vehicles are coming. And these are the things that now not just technical people, but business and marketing and sales have gotten into that. And they want to have these numbers rise as fast as they can. But look at that. This is 2020, things are rising in 10 million. 2020 is not here, but that is what we would say. But I would also like to share with you some other things which go beyond that. Up to 2050, but basically they are saying that around 2040, and I really like this particular survey coming out of Victoria, state of Victoria in Canada. But they said that maybe if we are on the tracks, things are going to be above 40% or so by 2040. And then by 2070 and all that, there are full saturations happening. As far as I know, there's a time between us today in 2016 and going there. So what is going to happen? Well, the other intelligent entity is not going to be just decline and go away. We are 7 billion now, we are going to go to 9 billion approximately in the same time frame. And convincing these people that it is good for you to let your thing go will not be as easy as we thought. Because there are issues which are probably not technical, but we are going to bump into them, which is that these robots will have to win our trust. And trust is a difficult thing. Ask Hillary Clinton. Or they do surveys, and this is one of the most well-respected survey coming out of our tree in Michigan, University of Michigan's Transportation Research Lab. And interestingly, Indians are the ones who are most accepting of autonomous systems. But otherwise, most of us, nearly 90% of us, has concerns about these. Only 10-11%, they say that I can get into this one and live with it. So now the issue is that what do we do with it? So let's just go back and think about artificial intelligence and intelligent robots. So one of the things I would like to suggest is that in order for us to develop intelligent systems, it's a good idea to look at other intelligent systems. Other intelligent systems sitting in here. The way we communicate is to understand each other. People, Javier needs to know that he's expressing something, he has got a certain context, he has a certain style, he has a certain language, gestures and all that, and he sees that, and then I look at his face and say, well, I don't know what you are talking about, so I repeat what I have to say. But there is an interaction between intelligent agencies because we are striving to understand each other so all of us can synergistically learn more. So if that is what makes intelligent humans to make progress, why don't we make similar thing for our robots to require them to understand me, understand my daughter, understand whosoever is driving it or sitting in it. But not only that, we would require them to see who are moving around them. And are they going to be playing safe? Or are they going to come right in front of you and say, stop? Or they are going to say that, move and go. There is a human being who is gesturing you, and you and I understand to maneuver ourselves around that. Would these intelligent robots also understand something? Or there could be intelligent agents who are sitting in a car, which is not intelligent. As we know, until 2050 and 2060, half of the vehicles which are going to be on the road are going to be driven by humans. How do humans tailgate? How do humans merge? How do humans overtake? How do humans cut in? Better make sure that the vehicles understand that, because they are going to be in and around you. So we basically said that we don't know the answers, but how about if we have intelligent agents, instrument the vehicles which are going to collect this data, and then figure out by machine learning, can we do these kinds of things? Can we have intelligent vehicles, the robots, which can understand, and I should have put really drivers in the quotes, that it need not be the, it's a person who can be certain times driver, certain times passenger, certain times just the ride which is taking. But what are the intentions? Are they comfortable? Are they irritated? Are they really scared of the way you are driving? Are they able to understand other drivers who are around us? Are they able to understand people who are surrounding you, the bicyclists, the skateboarders that we see all the time? And the thing that I'm trying to say there is that there is no there. If we work on this one, understanding human intention over about 2 to 4 seconds period is very possible. We can show that. Literature is coming out. Understand other vehicles. It is coming around. Understand other humans. It's a tough one. But we will like show you that it is happening. And if we can do that and put that in the control loop, hopefully we will be able to do this thing a little better. So a few things that we have done, and this one you have seen it a long time ago, but this was our first one to really convince our sponsors and now a lot of manufacturers to say that there is a reason for you to look at just the driver's head. Very simple little thing to compute, because you get 500 milliseconds extra time to figure out whether the person is going to make a lane change or not. We figured out, we can even look at people who are going to be turning different designations, but they are all doing these kinds of things. So intentions of the human beings coming around, people come to the lab, Discovery Channel, nobody knows who it looks like. They say they have to drive it, the guy keeps driving it. The machine learning was general enough that when this guy drives the vehicle, many years after that was developed, it is going on San Diego freeways, and every 1.2 seconds, we are able to tell that guy, basically, that he is making a change or he is not making a change. And then we can do a lot of studies which would say what is the importance of one queue versus other queue. I will let this thing pass, but the whole idea is that if we are going to come up with these intelligent systems, we really need to humanize them. What does it mean? That we should be able to look at humans in the vehicle, should we look at humans around the vehicle, humans in the surround vehicles, and then this is the whole enchilada, that many things we know how to do, a lot of things we do not know how to do. But that's wonderful for us to do research. So we are instrumenting these vehicles and they look at a lot of things, but the basic idea when we started was this, that you can actually think about systems which will have smarts in it. This problem was studied for 4 years, and our sponsors came that, can you figure out whether the driver should merge or not, whether they should accelerate, decelerate, how much should that be, should they change lanes or not, and how should they change it, and all of those kinds of things. And nice thing is that you can go in Germany and buy this vehicle next year, because Audi has put these things, and we will not go into the details of it, but people worked on these things, along with my friend sitting there, Professor Petros Yanis at USC, and people came up with systems that we could take after a CES event in 2014 and drive it on the streets of San Francisco and on the Candlestick Park's parking garage where the New York Times and Motor Trend Magazine's reporters were driving this vehicle, and it was able to do this particular task.
More like an advanced jetliner. That's the approach Audi is taking with its ultimate smart car. KPIX5's John Ramos says it's like autopilot for the freeways.
At the Consumer Electronics Show going on in Las Vegas, people get to see the latest high-tech innovation, and much of it is appearing in automobiles. And while a lot of the buzz is centering around autonomous or self-driving cars, the engineers at Audi were in San Francisco today to show off technology that's a bit more realistic.
The whole aim of this from the beginning was to really work on technologies that would take the stress and the trauma and driving in very congested, chaotic situations and the wasted time and all that out of the picture.
And much of that help lies in navigation. This Audi A6 has a dashboard monitor that can call out amazingly specific directions.
Turn right after McDonald's.
The car has a database that can predict when a certain street is likely to be crowded, or where parking lots are located, and when they usually fill up.
It'll be able to tell you if you leave in 15 minutes, you'll have a parking spot. If you leave in 30, you won't.
There is a heads-up display reflected in the windshield that only the driver can see that indicates when it's safe to change lanes. And while the car has sensors that monitor traffic outside, it's also keeping an eye on the driver inside. Two cameras are watching the driver, and if he takes his eyes off the road and begins swerving or an obstacle pops up, the car will take over control of steering and braking and even momentarily disable the accelerator. It's not exactly hands-free driving, but more like having a really smart backseat driver.
Just like autopilot in a plane, the plane is often flown by the computers. But the pilot isn't in the back end of the cockpit.
And what we really wanted to say is that these are some of the things which are coming on board, but they are not replacements of humans, or they are not really going to rely on certain things that humans do. So this is one of the things that was put into that, and now it is part of Audi A8's thing, but it was able to see with LiDARs a full 360 surround. And it was also with Ashish's multi-camera continuous alertness monitoring system was able to actually predict not just by the pose but by the dynamics of it, and it is a learning system that it has figured out when Trevor is paying attention and when he's not, and whether this is going to be critical when he collides or not. I wish Joshua Brown had this one. Then we don't stop, so we want to make sure that our sponsors are always very happy. I was telling that this year in CES, one of our sponsors, who's not, they're not Maserati, but they happen to have Maseratis in their garage. So they came for last few years working with us, and they said that we like a lot of things that you do, but can you make it work on a chip that resides in the phones that we make? And this company happens to be Qualcomm, which, by the way, purchased, where is Bart, your company for $48 billion last week. Because your company in semiconductors is well known to be those who make automotive grade semiconductor chips. And so Qualcomm is now into it, and we started developing systems, and this one was showcased at CES 2016. And it did win, by the way. I must tell my students that they should be very proud that it was the best demo award at IEEE CVPR in June. I will not show more of that, but basically I'm trying to say that these systems are now becoming even realizable on embedded processors. But really the key thing that we want to emphasize is that we want to have this continuous situational awareness that humans would have, because there are so many wonderful sensors that our cars have, thanks to my dear friend like Professor Dickmans and generations of researchers who followed him. They have been developing these systems which are looking around. But we also want to make sure that the systems are capable to look at the people inside, because the dance is between people who are around, who are inside, and things that they drive. They are all humans. So instead of waiting for humans to disappear from the planet, how about coming up with systems which would allow us to understand humans who are going to inhabit our planet? I'm going to go quickly, but there are a few things that I want to show you. So this is Sujita's dissertation, which she defended last month. But what are the possible now the types of things that we are able to do? So these are the things which are, this is a regular vehicle. She drives from Santiago to Riverside every weekend to get her laundry cleaned by her mother. But this system, she uses it, I use it, my students use it, one GoPro, and it does this continuously, not stopping. But what do you do with this? I'm able to understand what is she doing, where is she looking, and all that kind of stuff. Maybe there are things I might be able to learn. But you know, why should we just look at Sujita? Because Sujita might be in the passenger seat doing her work. And the car needs to understand that also. So Andreas is sitting in the same car, but now he's a passenger. And system is telling where he is, looking around and doing what he's doing. Well, there can be other people. Last week, some of them were sitting in the car, and I said they need to show something which is real for people like my friend Christoph Stiller and Uwe Franke and all that. He says that, you know, the problem is when the construction happens and these emergency vehicles come and then they put these phones there. What is he talking about? Maybe he's talking about things like this. Sorry about the quality of the video. But this is right outside of our campus. UCSD in big expansion mode. You can start seeing this is really what is happening. And this is a vehicle. I would like to decide whether it's autonomous or not. But this is a vehicle which is doing this stuff. And then I show you what is going on there. And interestingly, what you see there are two curves about the alertness of the people in the car. One is the passenger, quote unquote, and the other one is the driver. And you see that there are times where the driver is not alert, but the passenger is alert. And vice versa, or the same. Now, if you are going to get into trouble and I am sleeping at the wheel, why do you wake me up? My daughter is awake, she is in the passenger seat. Ask her to do something. You need that kind of stuff. Intelligence is going to be distributed among multiple human entities as well as multiple systems which are in there. And then there are some interesting things that people who really work in the measuring these things and all that. So these are the attention buffers only for the driver. You saw driver and passenger. But you can do analysis of what are they focusing on. And some of these things you will start seeing there. And I hope Petros doesn't call somebody in DMV, because this is a proof that we were doing an illegal thing while we are driving. And we were hoping that there were two of them, they are looking around, but you can see how the gaze frequencies and gaze durations and gaze zones are going on, and you can actually derive extremely reliable metrics about whether they are attentive or not. But now let's talk about what happens when there are people around us. And as much as we would like to say, really, that survey says that by 2050, if you really want to push the public policy people, they might make you special roads where, like in Shinkansen, there would not be other vehicles or other human beings who are going to come on the track. But I really think that's going to be a tough problem when you are talking about urban streets, especially things inside Europe and some other places which are older than America. So you will have to do things like this. So what did we start doing, and there's a paper in tomorrow's session, but let me show you what can happen. So this is just our car part outside our garage, and this is 3 days ago. This was, you will start seeing that this was a Halloween time, last Monday. So some of them might be even wearing some costumes. But these are pedestrians right on the main street at UCSD campus, and we have a vehicle which has all these intelligence functions, but it better be aware what is going around. So what can we do? Yeah. Take a look. Akshay and a few others in our lab have been pursuing this thing with tremendous focus, but they are actually now able to tell who are crossing, who are going away, who is texting, who is attentive only on their phones. And this paper about pedestrians and their phones will be in tomorrow's session, but you start seeing that you can detect pedestrians, you can find their phones, you can do activity analysis, and you can come up with a situation of awareness of what is going on. And this is not a simple thing. Read journal articles where they basically say two or three pedestrians walking. This is a, I don't know how many pedestrians are there, but a whole bunch. So now let's just talk about, can we tell something about the vehicles which are surrounding us? So these are some of the things that my dear friend and yours too, Brendan Morris, while he was doing his PhD with us several years ago, which by the way won the best dissertation award for our society, he was looking at how can I understand higher level semantics by observing trajectories, either from cameras which are looking at freeways or cameras or sensors which are mounted on vehicles. And that has given us a lot of wonderful things to work on. And I will skip on some of these things. But basically what we started doing, and this paper is going to be presented tomorrow. But this is our latest work where we put $200 GoPros. By the way, GoPro made by our own alum, $2 billion company, graduated with bachelor's in 1999. And now he has got simple cameras are allowing us to do this, which by the way, last week, Elon Musk says that in 4 years, his car is going to have 8 cameras, basically what we are showing there. But they are able to look at multiple perspectives, connect them, do associations, do continuous tracking, and evaluation of normal, abnormal, risky, and those kinds of trajectories which are around us. Understanding humans who are in the vehicles, this is needed. Now, other thing which is going to be, in 3 weeks, Eshad is going to defend his dissertation, and he started working on something which is very interesting. Because we are also very much concerned about how do you know how good your system is to really convince somebody that you have made an improvement, or you haven't. But research is like that, that you come up with something new, and it may not beat what is the benchmark. In another field, in computer vision area, people have been, in the last 5 to 10 years, have been very careful, thanks to some of Christoph Stiller's students, who started developing data sets. That people used to reject these kinds of papers, because they were, what's the big deal about data sets? And now I'm glad to see that there are workshops and special issues on that. But the point is that people could develop systems. And then we started realizing in our own mind that, you know, these systems are done which basically assume that all objects are equal. Good assumption if you are trying to ask the computer to do that. But there can be 100 people in front of you, there can be 100 cars in front of you. Do you really want to understand each and everything in the same manner? Or as humans, when we are driving, we actually assess the situational criticality of other intelligent agents in real time. And because of that, we are able to avoid collisions. And most importantly, all my car maker friends must remember that because of that, cars follow smooth trajectories. Not because of the controls which are going to really push you back and forth, depending upon the potential fields around you. But it is the human being who has a feel that, oh, this is a big truck which is stopped there, I need to go around it slowly. And how do we do that? Well, you will see that this is again borrowed from my dear friend Christoph's wonderful hometown of Karlsruhe. But you can see that here, there are vehicles which are detected, pedestrians which are detected, and all of that you see are specific detection results. We have developed, many of you have developed these things, and we basically start looking at these things. But then we said that what happens if we actually have this data and present it to normal human beings? and ask them this question: which vehicle is potential threat and which is not? Can we actually conduct these kinds of human subject studies and then come up with metrics which are defined by mathematics, which is going to say that this is what people do? They look at a vehicle, all the green ones, they say, I'm not worried about it. The red one is, I need to worry about it. When it becomes a little orange, less worry about it. But as you see this, I would like to believe that most of us are getting a feeling that not all objects are equal. And these are real people like you and me who have been taking these studies. What happens when you're in urban streets? You are looking at people, and there's green ones, don't worry, he's having a tea or coffee on the side. But there's a person who might be moving around. They are red ones. Not machine doing that, but human beings have taken this study, and then whatever came out, we analyzed that with statistical tools, and we said that these are the types of things that you and I, when we are driving safely and smoothly, look at. And that allows us to really pacify. So it's interesting. The younger ones in our lab have a very different way of assessing the risky things and all. They are also driving safely. Then some of us were on the other side of the car. That we are also driving safely, but we are clustered in separate parts. Another thing that my dear friend car makers need to worry about, you cannot sell one size fits all for $100,000. You want to buy a car which is going to drive as I want it to be driven. My daughter wants a car, she wants to do it completely differently. Not a new car, not a new programming, but it has to figure out that what is the personal preference, style and all that for us to do. So, I will come to a conclusion. Again, sorry for taking you on an overview tour, but I really think that there are some wonderful problems for us to work on. And I always say that, I mean, having great problems to work on is a good fortune for us who are involved in this particular endeavor. But to work on a problem which would save somebody's life, doesn't happen to all of us. But I guarantee you that things that you are going to do in this particular area is going to save somebody's life, and most probably it is going to be a life or an injury of one of your loved ones. I have no doubt. So it's a great field, great time for us to look at this thing. And once again, I really thank you all and appreciate this invitation.
Thank you very much, Professor Trivedi, for sharing this keynote with us. Dear listeners, either you are a researcher in intelligent transportation field or are just interested, don't hesitate to contact us. We are recruiting volunteers and your help will be highly appreciated. Contact us on our email at itsspodcast@gmail.com or just simply message us on any of our social media. Don't forget to subscribe and share this episode. Any comment or suggestion is welcome. This podcast is sponsored by IEEE, Intelligent Transportation System Society. This was Dr. Mayam Kabeshkar from IEEE, ITS Society.